Turn it back to the book of Job, if you will. And if you're looking at an outline, or for that matter, if you're not, we are talking about various doctrinal themes in the book of Job. We're, in many respects, dealing with the deeper part of the book. As you, if you're studying the book, you're wading through. Some people say you get bogged down in these speeches, and that can happen. You really don't want it to, because there is, there are several very important points to the life of a righteous individual that are being considered, bannered back and forth, if you will. Several conditions, frames of mind, thought processes that I think we all are in danger of falling into. You see, and I will name it a point in the lesson, two extremes, one on which Job falls, or one side on which Job falls, and the other extreme, the three friends fall. You don't want to get to that point where you think like that. And the book really presses you not to do that. But we've come to a point where now Job is sitting with these three, and they're arguing, and they're sticking to their guns, as we might say. They're arguing the point that Job is guilty. We've seen that and looked at that. Job is guilty, and he's saying, no, I'm not. And some people would say that's really what you have, is about, you know, 17 different ways to say that. I'm convinced there's a lot more going on here than that. But nonetheless, we've reached a point where we have that. And so, if you're looking at an outline, I'm talking about tonight the idea of a righteous person, and I'll approach it from that standpoint, a righteous person or anybody, to a degree, considering where they stand with God. I'm convinced that all the time we should have in our minds, where do I stand with God? But that there especially should be those crucial points in our life. We're going to have to make decisions from time to time. We're going to come to the point in life where, because of circumstances, it may be similar to what Job is going through. It might be quite different. But because of circumstances, you're going to have to question where you're going in your life as a Christian. Are you going to continue to serve God with all the fervor that you've had in the past? Or, for that matter, are you going to consider serving God with more than you've ever had? Are you going to, because of circumstances in life, resign yourself that life is futile, it doesn't matter anyway, so forget it? You know, kind of do the best you can, quote unquote, heavy quote marks, and let it go with that. We go on and on with that, but the point is, you've got to consider where you are, where you stand with God. Now, Job is, admittedly, his life has changed. No one denies that. The situation at the beginning of the book, where life is wonderful, he has family, he has position, he has riches, he has honor, he has friends, he has his health, he has his standing with God, he is perfect and just, and on we could go. And as we've shown, he loses all of that. One by one, he loses everything that he ever had, so he sits at this point with nothing, as he sits around the fire with the three friends. And as they argue back and forth, what you do, Job, you know you've done something. Admit it to yourself, admit it to us. Job insists he's right. You go back to Job chapter 13, where we began tonight, where Ed was reading for us a moment ago. And I want to consider two passages together. Won't reread all of this, but go to Job 13 and look especially at verse 16. And I'm going to read a passage from chapter 13 and chapter 16 together, both times Job's speaking. In chapter 13, he says in verse 13, hold your peace, leave me alone, or be silent, leave me alone, that I can speak, and let come on me what will. But especially am I interested in what he says in the next couple of verses. Why do I take my flesh and my teeth and put my life in my hand? Though God slay me, I will trust in him, but I will maintain my ways before him. And then verse 16, God will be my salvation. Just the very first part of that in particular. God will be my salvation. And then you'll notice he says, because a hypocrite, some many translations say, a hypocrite will not come before God. He means in an acceptable fashion. And a hypocrite cannot approach God. Very similar to what he will say if you'll turn a page over to chapter 16 and look at verse 17. He will say, and I'm jumping right in the middle of a thought here, maybe I should read 16 with it, but my face is foul with weeping, on my eyelids is the shadow of death. I was looking at that last week, but notice as he goes on here, verse 17. I'm doing all of this crying, all of this remorse is not for any injustice in my hands. And my prayer is pure, he says. Notice as he goes on here in verse 18. O earth, cover not thou my blood, and let my cry have no place. Also now, behold, my witness is in heaven. It's very similar to something Paul would say in Romans 1. God is my witness is the idea. My witness is in heaven. My record is on high. And then he goes on to look back at the friends. What you understand, and we could read a number of other passages, but these make the point. Job is saying, I'm innocent, I know I'm right, I'm not a hypocrite. You're sitting here and you're accusing me, you're saying that's the only reason that a person ever suffers like this. It's not so. It is not so. I am not a hypocrite, I know I'm right. I pray to God, I'm allowed to pray to God, I have... You might say it like this. I have lived a life of praying to God. I approach God and He doesn't reject me. I remind you too that in this day and time, we said before that this is during what is known as the oral period. And what you mean by that is that God, there are no written books. Indeed, Job is most probably the first book or at least the first story to be recorded at length. There just isn't a written Bible. This is way before Moses. There isn't any Genesis and so forth, much less any Isaiah, Jeremiah, etc. This is when God speaks orally. This is when you come to God and approach God. If you're righteous, you're accepted. If you're not, you're rejected. Job has said, my life has been one of being able to call upon God, to cry unto God. He's accepted me. I'm righteous. I know I'm right. I know I'm innocent. I know I'm not a hypocrite. The Bible makes it plain to us in passages, you know, famously like Psalm 66 and verse 18, where David would make the point, God does not hear the unrighteous. God does not accept the unrighteous. You can come to God in prayer as a hypocrite when you're not right, you have no intention of being right, and God won't hear it. If you want a New Testament passage, 1 Peter 3 and verse 12, the eyes of the Lord, quoted from the Old Testament, the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous. His ears are open unto their prayers. Or some translations say His ears attend unto their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. When you look at passages like this, Job is right. So we hear Job saying to his friends, my prayer is pure. There isn't injustice in my hands. We might continue to read further in the book. If you're still in the book of Job, look at chapter 23, when he will say this down in verse 10. And all of these passages I'm reading are Job speaking, as Ed pointed out. In Job 23, down in verse 10, He, God, knows the way that I take. When He has tried me or tested me is the idea. I shall come forth as gold. Do we hear that, what he's saying? In other words, you know, if he's purifying me, if he's refining me, as I've made the point that God is doing in this book, if he's doing that, when it's all said and done, I will shine as gold. You know, it's kind of like sometimes people will say, even in the modern vernacular, I'm gold. What does that mean? It means you're pure. It means you're good. It means you're great. It means you're pristine at whatever it is you do. Job's saying that. I'm gold. I'm golden. So I've come forth as gold. Notice as he goes on here, just to finish the thought, my foot has held its steps. His way have I kept and not declined. What is he saying there? I've perfectly done what he wanted me to do. Notice verse 12. Neither have I gone back from the commandment of his lips. I have esteemed the words of his mouth more than the necessary food. Job is saying the most important thing in my life has been serving God and I've served him. In fact, Job would even come to the point, if you turn another page or so over to chapter 31, basically what he says to the friends is just be fair about it. In chapter 31, after recounting again the kind of life he's lived, and in this case, basically saying that unlike what most people do, where their eyes kind of avert from their spouse and lust after other women, I haven't done that.
So chapter 31, verse 6, Job says, "Let me be weighed in an even balance, that God may know my integrity. You judge me fairly, what you're going to find is I'm not a hypocrite. I'm a righteous person. I'm innocent. I've done what's right. It's been more important than eating food to me. There's never been anything more important than that. When I've approached God, I've been accepted. My prayer's been pure, etc., etc., etc." Now, I'll leave you with that thought, and I'll come back to it. But Elihu, if you'll notice very shortly in chapter 33, kind of sums up what Job has been saying. Now, Elihu, if you remember, is the younger of the four who apparently come. I don't know if he comes with the other three. The book never tells us that. But in the beginning of the book, we see the three, never mentions Elihu. Then all of a sudden in chapter 33, he busts on the scene, so to speak, and you realize there's a fourth guy at least sitting there, a younger guy, very obviously. And here's the way he sums up everything Job has been saying. Look at chapter 33 down in verse 8. He says, "Surely thou hast spoken in my hearing, and I've heard the voice of thy words, saying," verse 9, "I am clean without transgression. I am innocent. Neither is there iniquity in me." Now, I want that to set in with you for a moment. If that's a true summary, and I hope I've read enough passages and I could double or triple that easily, I believe it is a true summary. Well, what about that? What about a person defending himself and basically saying, as Elihu sums it up, "You, Job, you say, I am clean without transgression. You say, I am innocent. There's no iniquity in me." How would you feel about somebody, forget Job for a minute, how would you feel about somebody saying that to you? I don't care how righteous they are, how good a Christian you think they are, how much you respect them, how much you look up to them, how much you believe. To the best of their ability, they do everything they possibly can do that's right. In fact, you believe they're just the best example of a Christian that walks the face of the earth. How would you feel if that and some of the other things that I've been reading, they were saying that to you? Would you say it borders on self-righteousness? If Elihu is even remotely correct, and if all those passages say anything, they surely do say that. It's exactly what he's been saying. Does it border on self-righteousness? I get you to turn over to 1 John 1 before you answer. I get you to turn over to 1 John 1 and remind yourself in verses 8 and 10 of what the Apostle John, an old, aged Apostle John, had to say of himself. And the reason I say of himself is because he doesn't say, if you say that you've not sinned, or you say you have no sin, but in fact he uses the pronoun we. If we say we have not sinned, if we say we have no sin, we make God a liar, we do not the truth, those phrases you see there. How do you feel about somebody who looks at you and says, "I haven't done anything wrong and I don't do anything wrong"? Does it border on self-righteousness? Now, regardless of the motivation, do the three friends push him into it? Yeah, from the moment Eliphaz in chapter 4 opens his mouth, they push him into it. Because the very first thing, remember, we saw this already. We will look at it again as we get to the end of the book and close the study out. But we saw Eliphaz from the very first say to Job, "You, Jack, are guilty. You deserve this. I mean, you're sitting here bemoaning what you're going through, and I'm sorry for you. But you deserve this, you have to deserve this, because who was ever righteous and went through anything like this?" Yeah, they pushed him into it. But it doesn't belie the fact, as Job is truly considering himself in this book and in these speeches. Yes, he's defending himself. And sometimes when we get into situations where we defend ourselves, if we're honest, we have to stop sometimes and check some of the things we're saying, lest we go too far. Is he going too far? Is he being self-righteous? I want you to go to chapter 32 with me, and let's begin to consider this, and consider Job for a moment. Because you might be surprised at my answer, incidentally. As you go to chapter 32 and you look at the first couple of verses, now Job here, as he continues, he said, so these three men cease not, or as the Bible here continues, so these three men cease not to answer Job because he was righteous in his own eyes. And then was kindled the wrath of Elihu, the son of, etc. Job is righteous and he's right in his own eyes. Is he self-righteous? What does it mean to be self-righteous? Elihu contends, as you look at Elihu's speech, and you've heard me say it, you would have heard several weeks ago at least, you would have heard me say that even though he's the youngest, I'm convinced he hits the closest to the truth in this book, in this speech. He only has one. But I'm the closest that he hits, I'm convinced he hits the closest to the truth. And what he says to Job is really profound. He contends that Job's emphasis in his speeches for the last 30 chapters, as we've seen, that Job's emphasis has been on himself and has been on his own righteousness. I'm right. I've lived right. I've done right. I was going along living right. I was, living my life and doing everything I knew to do and everything that I was supposed to do. I was fine. And even God would have said that, right? Have you considered my servant Job? He's perfect. He's just. He's this. He's that. Job has contended for all these chapters, I was living my life like that and everything was wonderful. And then, bam, all this mess came on me. And I don't understand it. I don't know why. I didn't do anything. But is that what Job is saying? Is Job only saying, I don't understand? Or is Job going further than that and saying, it should not be happening? It can't happen because I'm too righteous for it to happen. Now the truth is, and I believe this is right, you might not, and that's fine. And this is my opinion, so take it with a grain of salt. I believe the truth is that most people get into this quandary. If you're a really good person, I don't mean a pretty good person, a so-so person, but I mean a really good person. And if you really are working and sacrificing and living like we know Job was living, that when things, quote-unquote, go wrong, that they get in this quandary where they begin to look at themselves, where most people would say, what I do wrong? Or most people would be inclined to say, I must have done something wrong. The really, really good person gets in this position of saying, no, I wasn't doing anything wrong. And as soon as you've made that statement, you've sentenced yourself. Because you see, the Apostle John wouldn't say that in 1 John 1, would he? How many times do we see the Apostle Paul, if I do this and this and this and this, I still... If I haven't done this exactly perfectly, well, it's still not good enough. Or if I do this and I do this and I do this and I do this, I could not still even then say. How many times do we see Paul saying things like that? What do we see John in 1 John 1 saying? Is that what we see Job saying? No, it's not. We see a very real human being here beaten down to the point, pushed into it, yes, but to the point of saying, nothing was wrong. And that's not so. That's just not so. And I believe that God, and I've said this before, but I want you to go to 1 Corinthians chapter 10 again. It's been about 3 weeks or so since I really looked at it. So let's look at it again. I've talked about often in here in this study, the limit. I've used that wall over there as an illustration. The wall's the limit. The closer you get to it, etc. But I want you to look at 1 Corinthians 10. We often read verse 13. We quote it. And you hear many people quote in some fashion, part of it, paraphrasing it or whatever. No temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. God is faithful, not allow you, not suffer you to be tempted above that you're able, that will with the temptation also make a way to escape that you may be able to bear it. And we hear that. Far less do we hear verse 12 quoted with it. Yet God put the two thoughts together. Verse 12 says, let him that thinks he stand take heed lest he fall. there has no temptation taken you. And I believe what you understand is this. The paragraph, the context, is of God's own people. And God's people left Egypt in a glorious fashion. They left Egypt having persisted through 10 of the worst plagues the world has ever seen, trusting in God, faith in God, holding on, went through the death of the firstborn that horrible night, ate that first Passover, etc., left that next day in a glorious fashion on the road to freedom. And then they spent the next 2 years, or close to it, grumbling and complaining and wishing to God they were back in Egypt as slaves. Until God said at the 10th time, basically they did that, that's it. Had enough. You're not going into the promised land. You're not going to make it. You're going to die out here in this wilderness. None of you but Joshua and Caleb is getting into the promised land. I'm sick of it. And none of them did. Wherefore, let him that thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. Where is Job? If we look at 1 Corinthians chapter 10, would we say verse 13 describes Job? No temptation taken you, you know, etc. God won't allow you to be tempted above that you're able. And most people use Job as the test case. I mean, nobody ever suffered more than Job, right? You've either made that statement or no doubt you've heard somebody say it. Nobody ever suffered more than Job. He's the test case. And even in the case of Job, God didn't allow him to be tempted above what he was able. And you see the end of the book of Job, and you see how Job comes through the story and is blessed by God and so forth. Well, I'll contend with you that, yes, chapter 10, verse 13 of 1 Corinthians describes the whole incident of Job, but I would suggest to you, and even contend with you, that verse 12 describes Job. That Job is an individual that is the best of the best. And when God uses him for the test case, that God believes he's the best of the best. I'm convinced of that. And yet at the same time, he's not flawless. And he has no more right than any other human being, be that Paul, John, you, or me, to say, I haven't done anything wrong, I don't do anything wrong, basically I'm perfect. We just can't say that. We are not. Every single one of us that's reached a state of maturity has fallen. We've sinned. We've failed. And the truth is, if we are honest, and if we're honest like the Apostle Paul, we would ask the question like he does in 2 Corinthians 11, basically, who sins and I don't? Or like John is doing in 1 John 1 when he says, if I would say I haven't sinned, if I say I don't have any sin, I make God a liar. Job is trying to do that. Job is pushed to the point, defending himself, where he's become righteous in his own eyes. The book, I think, is saying that. He's become righteous in his own eyes. He thinks he stands on that contention. I am innocent. He stands on that. He makes his defense on that. And as soon as he does, he falls. From the moment in the book he does that, just like God says, in 1 Corinthians 10, verse 12, he falls. But it takes, because he's so good, it takes the limit, shoving him up against it, to expose it to himself. And it takes God saying, because no one else would be able to say it and him believe it. Fortunately for us, we have the Bible to say it to us. He didn't have that. So God orally speaks to him, as he had always done, and tells him, you're not perfect. No, you are not right. And yes, the further you go, your mouth condemns you. You, in fact, are a hypocrite. And that must be an astonishing thing for him to have to come to face to face with that. Now, lest you think that when I say all of that, because you might say, man, what a condemnation of Job. No, it's not. It's really not. Because I want to show you the difference. Look at Luke 18 for a moment. And let me ask a question as I look at a couple of passages. Is this Job? I mean, eerily, when you look at the passage that we read, the last one we read in Job, he was righteous in his own eyes. It eerily reminds you of something Jesus said in Luke 18. We know the classic parable. Look at Luke 18 and verse 9. He spoke this parable unto certain ones that trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. Is that Job? Is it that Job trusts in himself that he is righteous? No. Because the passage here is indicating that they trust really only in themselves. That they're righteous. And they look down on everybody else. I think Job is doing that. I don't think he ever... I really don't agree with the part of Elihu when Elihu is basically saying, you leave God out of the equation. I don't think Job does that. I just think that Job feels he's right before God, in the sight of God. And that God, like I go back to the whole idea of I've approached God and he's accepted me and all of that, that is why he thinks he's righteous. Let me suggest another passage to you out of the book of Luke. Turn back a page or so to chapter 16. Let me find it in my notes here. Yes, chapter 16, verse 15. Jesus said of the Pharisees, notice he's concerning them here, regarding them. He said of the Pharisees, you are they which justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts. What is the heart of Job? The heart of Job is basically to be right. The heart of Job is inclined to be right. The heart of Job wants to be right. Right now, the heart of Job believes he is right. And that's unfortunate, because he's not. But he wants to be right. He's not this. He's not, and I won't turn back and read it, but in Luke chapter 10 and verse 29, remember the parable of the story of the lawyer who came up to Jesus that provoked the parable of the Good Samaritan? And you remember how Jesus was questioning back and forth, you know, do this for your neighbor. Well, who is my neighbor and all that? Remember what Luke said about that? He, willing to justify himself, said to Jesus, you know, who is my neighbor? Job isn't this. We're not talking about this kind of person. Now go back with me, if you will, to the book of Job, and let's consider the real truth of man's, and I'll call it this, and I know this is kind of a complex statement, but I'm going to hopefully try to make a point or two about it. The real truth of man's perceived justice. When you look in the book of Job, you consider the word justice, you know, try me in the balance, put me in an even balance, and all of this kind of thing. I'm just before God. I'm innocent, I'm just, etc. We see the word justice in the book of Job quite a bit. And the question is, what does it mean to be just? When we talk about God's justice, what do we have to concern ourselves with? Is Job just? I mean, he's claiming to be, I am just. Weigh me in the balances and you'll find out I'm just, I'm innocent, etc. Is Job just? When you look in the Bible, man can never address the subject of justice. Justice is righteousness. It's the idea of being right. How you stand before God. And to put that in the simplest of terms, where do you, and I'll ask it of all of us, where do I stand with God right now? There's only two places, only two conditions. I'm either right with God or I'm not. I'm either just or unjust, righteous or unrighteous. At any given moment in time, as long as I'm alive, that will be the case. But you can't speak of man's justice, his righteousness. You can't even talk about that without considering what it takes to be righteous. Job isn't considering that. If he is, he's only considering it from the standpoint of what he's done. And this is where too many people fail. If I were to draw it out on the board, even though we know this is not so, we know it's not. We know this is flawed reasoning. It can't be right. We talk about it, and yet at the same time, we practice it. If we picture ourselves with a balance, no artist here, but if we picture ourselves with a balance, and let's say we've got this, and we start saying of our lives, we start viewing our lives, and we think in terms of the good we do and the bad we do. That's how we weigh it. That's how we figure righteousness and justice. Am I good? I do more good. Am I bad? I don't do as much bad. Am I just with God? Am I righteous with God? How does God see me? Does He judge me to be righteous? I'm a good guy. We think like that. Our emotions get in the way, and they're getting in the way of Job. Job is saying, I know I'm good. I know I'm right. I know I'm just. God's justice must be meted out to me, but it's not being. Because you see, I am so good. In fact, let's say it like Job does. I'm perfectly good. So I should be blessed by God. God should only bless me because it just ain't any bad. Wait a minute. What? Whoa! Who are you? Romans 3, verse 23. We remember that verse, right? All have sinned. How much sin? Whole lot? Outweighing the good? 10 times more than the good? How much bad? One. And fallen short. You can't consider righteousness or justice without considering the standard of justice. And when God views it this way, this is what God says. As long as that's the case in your life, and it is, with every little child here, there's no sin, never have committed a sin. Ethan fits this scale. He's only good. There's no bad, no sin. He's never fallen short, nor has any child ever. But the moment you sin, Romans 7, sin revived and I died. That's the truth. Who are you, Job? The book points out you've got to be somewhere around 75 or 80 years old. I've heard you say you've never done anything wrong. Now maybe your good outweighs your bad 20 to 1, 100 to 1, 1,000 to 1. I don't know what it takes to be the best. But you're not perfect. And it makes you consider what justice, what righteousness really is. It makes you realize, not only can you not do this, but I tell you what else you can't do. You can't say, I'm the best. He was. I wouldn't say that. And you probably wouldn't say that. But God would have said it of Him. He's the best. If you want to put Him on a scale where you weigh Him, quote unquote, against everybody else, and that's what Job is basically doing, when weighed against everybody else, I'm number one. I'm that good. So what? God doesn't judge you like that. Bible never tells you you're going to judgment day and God is going to hold up all the bad people in the world. See, that's what the Pharisee is doing, isn't it? Now, thank God I'm not like this, 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 and this. God's not doing that on judgment day. Hold all those people up there and say, well, Michael, you're better than every one of these guys. Yeah, you were a hypocrite. Yeah, you were a lousy Christian, but come on in. Not going to happen. The truth is, God is going to weigh me against myself. How did I grow? Am I better today than yesterday? And the truth is, if you want to talk about comparisons, God is going to weigh me against, and this would be me, against Jesus. And I'm never, ever exceeding the righteousness of Christ. I can have it. I want you to hear that carefully. I can have the righteousness of Christ. Romans 3 and 4. I'm not going to go through that. Go home and read it. I can have His righteousness, but I can never exceed it and therefore be righteous without Him. When you look at Job as he continues here, and I want us to look at Eliphaz's argument. Look at chapter 4 for a minute, and then we're going to go to one final passage and we'll be done tonight. But if you look at Eliphaz, Eliphaz began verse 7. Remember, I pray you, Job, whoever perished being innocent, or where were the righteous cut off? You know, that assumes that no one, and I want you to hear it, no one who is suffering, or maybe I should say it like this, that all who are not suffering are innocent. Is that the point? Is it that everybody who's not going through the trials of Job or the trials of the one you know are innocent? That's not the case. And we know that. Eliphaz goes on to say here, notice verse 8, even as I have seen, they that plow iniquity and sow wickedness reap the same. Have you seen that? I have sometimes. I think we saw it here the other night when the president came on and made a statement about a guy who had sown wickedness, plowed evil, and he paid for it. But does every unrighteous, wicked person in this life, does he always pay in this life? No. Eliphaz is just all wet on this. That's just not the case. As you go further here and you look at what Eliphaz is saying, if you look at chapter 15, here's how hopelessly the side of Eliphaz gets. Look at chapter 15 and look down at verse 14. What is man that he should be clean? And he which is born of a woman, that he should be righteous. Eliphaz basically works himself by the time he gets to chapter 15 into saying, man can never be righteous. Only God is righteous. Well, is that the case? And that's not the case either. Man can be righteous and is called so by God. Now, on the basis of his own good? No. Romans 3 and 4, only on the basis of Christ's good. Now, they don't understand all of that in the book of Job, and I know that, but you and I do. Man can only be righteous on the basis of God's righteousness. That's why, if you turn to chapter 9, that's why Job gets into contemplating this whole question. How can man, what is man, that he should be considered righteous to God? Because they're pressing him on it. How do you call yourself just? How do you see yourself as righteous? Well, I don't know, but I know I am. Well, you can't be. And the questions he asks here, you can't be without Jesus in the equation. And he argues it. It's one of the best, if not the best, Old Testament argument for the necessity of Jesus. We're not going to go through all of it tonight. We don't have time to do that. But look at the question in Job 9 and verse 2. I know it is so of a truth. In other words, that man can be righteous. I know it's so. But how should he be just with God? How is it that God, in other words, what Job is saying is, God didn't put us here to be unrighteous. God didn't put us here en masse to go to judgment day and look at us en masse, every human being that ever lived, and say, none of you measure up, I don't want any of you. He just didn't do that. I know that's not so, but I just don't understand how. And then he begins to contemplate it. And you notice as you go through chapter 9, you talk about, you know, Job basically says, I would go to God. I would consider my plight before God. I know I'm innocent. I know I'm righteous, but you do all of this to me. I would go to, but who can plead with God? Who can stand toe-to-toe with God? Who can question God? That's what he's basically saying here. Man's not on God's level. Look at verse 3. If he contends with him, he can't answer him one of a thousand questions. Or verse 32. When he says, he, God, is not a man, as I am, that I should answer him. You don't argue with God. If God says, this situation is right for you, Job, then it's right. Does he understand it? Do I have to understand it? No. But it's got to be right. How do you argue with God? Man's never in a position to know what God knows. Look at verse 10. When he says, God does great things. Notice the phrase, past finding out. That doesn't mean that you just don't know right now, but you'll figure it out next week. It means God does things you cannot understand. Not that you don't understand, but you never will here on this earth. And you have to accept that, that God is just that far above you. And what He does is that far beyond you. His ways are past finding out. That's the whole point. Look at verse 11. Lo, he goes by me and I see him not. He passes on also, I perceive him not. I don't understand God. You ever found yourself saying that? Welcome to the human race. I don't understand God. Do you understand God? In all God's complexity, everything that God is. Do you understand God? You have to be God to understand Him, or at least be in eternity with Him and brought up to being able to understand, which is what apparently 1 John 3 promises us. But here in this life, you ain't never going to understand God. And Job says that. How do I reason with God? Look at verse 14. How much less shall I answer Him? And notice the phrase, and choose out my words for reason with Him. How do you reason with God? How do you go to God and plight your case and reason with God? Even though you might say it. Even though you might pray it. I don't deserve this, God. Why? Well, that. You know, I'm good. I'm too good. I'm a lot better than this, etc., etc. I don't deserve it. How do you say that to God? What arguments are you going to use to build your case? Job has a fatal flaw here. He even understands he does. It's just that he's forgetting it throughout the book. Notice as he goes on to say in this chapter, to close it out, that there's just basic inadequacies in man. It's impossible to reach God on a one-to-one basis, on our own. We don't have the strength. Verse 19, if I speak of strength, lo, He is strong, and thus I am weak. I have no right to an audience with Him. Notice verse 19. If I speak of strength, lo, He is strong. And if of judgment, who shall set me a time to plead? What gives you a right? I mean, you know, we ought to think like this. Sometimes we put God so much in a box, and we humanize God, and I mean in a bad way, to a point that we figure we can stand face to face with God and tell Him like it is. You see, man doing that. I won't believe in God. I won't trust God. I won't follow the Bible. And I'll tell you why. Who are you? What are you? Job understands it here. You have no right without His permission to even have an audience with God. You can stand up because God allows it. Because He won't strike you dead from the moment you say it. But you have no right to stand up and look up at heaven in defiance and say, you should never have done this to me. He's God. You have no right to even have an audience to say it. Job understands that. Man can't truly even know himself, much less God. Look at verse 21. Though I were perfect, this is one of his better moments. Though I were perfect, yet would I not know my soul. You don't even know yourself, nor do I. How many times have you found yourself saying, I would never, and you did? How many times have you said, if this happened to me, I couldn't, but you could? You don't even know yourself, much less know God. And finally, as Job says here in verse 32, as we pointed out, God is not a man. He's not a man. I might could go to a fellow man and argue my case and clear myself. That would make sense to another human. I mean, if he were honest and fair, that's what Job is pleading for, try me in an even balance. Job could say to any of them sitting there, I'm better than you. And I believe he would have been right. But he's trying to argue that point. How do you argue that with God? Look at verse 30, and I'll close with this. If I wash myself with snow water and make my hands never so clean, yet God would plunge me in the ditch. You know what that's saying in modern terminology? If I rationalize and reason and build a case that says I'm just fine, God will throw me in a ditch. And that's exactly what he's done with Job. That's where we'll go from here. If you're not a child of God, what this lesson is saying is trust God, not yourself. What this lesson is saying is come to God, who has the standard of righteousness, and accept that standard. Believe in God, obey God. In our day and time, you confess that Jesus is the Son of God. You repent, you're baptized for forgiveness of your sins. And you live your life obeying God. And thus you have the righteousness of Jesus Christ. Maybe you're here and you have been baptized, but you know you've not been obeying God. Don't build a case to justify yourself.
and rationalize that that's enough. Go to God and beg forgiveness, and God will grant you mercy. If you're here and you need to come, please come. Always stand and sing.